This episode is brought to you by Vuori. I love sports. I know you do too. I also know that lots of you exercise, but if you're like me and my wife, the beloved sports gal, you're sick and tired of ugly, uncomfortable workout gear, especially, you know, I do a lot of walking. I walk around LA. I make calls. I listen to podcasts. Here are two words that will change everything. Vuori clothing, a line of activewear that is unbelievable. The best thing about Vuori is you can lounge around in it. You can work out in it. You can go outside. You can go shopping down in your local wherever. And you never feel like you're either underdressed or overdressed. You're just comfortable. You can wear it when you're training, traveling, lounging around the house. Go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet. Here's the deal. Our listeners get 20% off their first purchase at Vuori.com/Simmons. Once again, Vuori.com/Simmons. This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Stadio Podcast. I'm Yusuf Wonga.
I'm Ryan Hunt.
Ryan, how are you doing?
I am all right. Thanks, man. How are you?
Not as good as Dortmund, to tell you that much.
Wow.
Dortmund are living good. They're living good.
Second biggest game that happened last night.
What, Osnabrück 0, Schalke 4?
Oh, you nipped my joke. I didn't even watch the Dortmund game because I thought we were going to talk about Osnabrück, Schalke. Or big result that though. You all joke, but
it is a big result. It is a big result.
Every result's a big result at this stage of the season.
Very
unless
true,
you're
indeed.
Solidly mid table, playing someone solidly mid table.
Can relate.
Well, I mean, you know, there was a big breakdown on Wrighty's House with Flo and Carl and Ian about Palace's win over United on Monday.
Oh.
Do you have any thoughts as a Manchester United fan before we get onto this?
No thoughts. What's that Men in Black thing? You know that...
Me? It was like me?
That thing that Will Smith uses to raise the memory.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you've already done one of those. Nice. Yeah. Smart. Well, yeah, go check Wrighty's House if you want to listen to that.
Let me not be uncharitable. I love what Glasner's doing at Palace, and I love what Alisa and Eze are doing. But just the whole group of them, Wharton, all of them, just the movement. Can I just say this about Palace? Like, there was a period, I think, in like 50-odd minutes in, where in about 5 minutes, they had like five incredibly good looks at goal.
Mm.
I also want to say a quick thing about, just in terms of scapegoating, I really rate Casemiro for playing back there, and I don't think he should have been a centre-back there. I don't think that was fair in terms of his physical capabilities. I think it should have been a younger, faster, fitter player because him and Evans side by side. I just want to say that like it's very easy to direct a lot towards Casemiro, but I think this one is on the coach actually, because I think the deployment of the pieces, when you look at the team sheet, the deployment of the pieces, the physicality of the matchup with Palace, it was a disaster from the start. Just in terms of you're asking unreasonable things physically of players past their physical prime who are then taking...
Dude.
Yeah,
you're asking a midfielder to play centre back and another alongside a guy who only signed to do his badges and chip in occasionally if there were some injuries. I mean, the injury list is massive, but still.
Right, and then when you play a midfielder at centre back, when Real Madrid do that, at least one of the two midfielders is extremely physical and quick, like Tchouaméni. And I just thought I'd had a lot of sympathy because I think that the players will get a lot more of this than I think Ten Hag will, and.
I'm not sure. Actually.
I think Onana was so exposed. You know, I actually felt weirdly enough. Palace are in a different league. I wanted to say that first of all. I don't want to be like this all about United. I think that what Glasner's doing at Palace in a short time already. I keep telling people. I mean, most people know this already, but He's just a very, very good coach. He's just a very, very good coach. And it's amazing that a team like Palace are in 14th. I mean, there's prior results as well. But what I love about the Premier League at times like this is you can watch a team in 14th place put on a coaching masterclass.
Mm.
And I kind of want that to be the last thing I say about it, because I want that to be about Palace and what they're doing, because I think it's really exciting.
For a more detailed discussion on that, go check Writer's House. Mm. And today we are going to talk about PSG Dortmund in the Champions League, Dortmund's progression to the final in Wembley for the first time since the last time the final was in Wembley. Before we get into that though, hope everyone's staying safe, staying well, wherever you are. Yeah, just a reminder, there'll be another Stadio tomorrow, and then you've got Writer's House on Friday as well.
Mm.
I reckon we get into it after this.
Do it.
This episode is brought to you by Vuori. I love sports. I know you do too. I also know that lots of you exercise, but if you're like me and my wife, the beloved sports gal, you're sick and tired of ugly, uncomfortable workout gear. Especially, you know, I do a lot of walking. I walk around LA. I make calls. I listen to podcasts. Here are two words that will change everything. Vuori clothing, a line of activewear that is unbelievable. The best thing about Vuori is you can lounge around in it. You can work out in it. You can go outside. You can go shopping down in your local wherever. And you never feel like you're either underdressed or overdressed. You're just comfortable. You can wear it when you're training, traveling, lounging around the house. Go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet. Here's the deal. Our listeners get 20% off their first purchase at Vuori.com/Simmons. Once again, Vuori.com/Simmons.
All right, man. Part to prance.
Wow.
Borussia Dortmund are through to their fourth ever European Cup final. The first since they went to Wembley the last time. They may yet face off against Bayern.
Wow.
In a repeat of that final, which would be kind of special. They went through after beating PSG 1-0 on the night, 2-0 on aggregate, thanks to a Mats Hummels header.
Just, wow, the composure. You know what? The first 20 minutes, you just thought something might be on. I just thought something might, this felt different. You know, we were concerned. We thought, look, actually, just because of, we love a good game of football, and we just thought the Dortmund might be overwhelmed given how PSG have shown up at home in this tournament. And just the first 20 minutes, the way that Dortmund were, you know, I mean, credit to PSG first of all, because they were pressing very high up. They were looking to break up and disrupt play high at the pitch. Gonzalo Ramos, I think he ran himself into the ground actually, because he was really running hard early on.
Mm.
With all of that, you know, and PSG were ferocious in some of the early stages, but just the composure Dortmund were playing with. There are a couple of times that Brandt gets the ball, and instead of playing the obvious quick counter, he slowed it down. And this was a negative when Real did it against Man City because it invited pressure. But when Brandt did it, it was brilliant because it made them unpredictable. And you weren't sure what poison they were going to pick, and it just kept PSG guessing, and it disrupted their rhythm. I just thought they never, apart from Vitinha, I feel like they never.
He was brilliant, actually.
He was exceptional. I feel like PSG, for all their pressure, never fully worked it out. Never. This is a strange thing to say because I have 30 shots, right, and goal, but it was just more that there was just something about them. Dortmund had their luck, but the organisation and the composure in key areas blew me away. There's one moment that summed up for me in the entire game, just before we get into the bigger analysis. Jadon Sancho, in the second half, the ball falls to him in his own box, and he plays a perfect volley pass inside his own box to a defender who then plays it out of the box. And I thought, that right there, that sums up the entire night. You have a winger back in his own box, not hoofing it clear under pressure, but just cushioning it into play, a better place to play it out. And I just thought that blew me away. And I think moments like that are why Dortmund absolutely deserve to go through.
I think over the two legs, they absolutely deserve to go through. I think if you just looked at the statistical breakdown or the XG or whatever from this second game in particular, it doesn't really tell the true story, because so much of that is the goal is such a crucial part in that, because there's a big split, I think, between before the goal and after the goal.
Yes.
And if you think that that's just game state, like Dortmund going into a 2-0, you know, having a 2-0 cushion at that point, they don't need to. They actually, you saw it in a multiple number of factors. They stopped playing short goal kicks after that. I actually thought the first change was a little bit of a, not a head scratcher, but one I was a bit like, oh, I'm not sure about that when Terzic took off Adeyemi for Marco Reus, because
I thought
Reus was good when he came on, but I think from that point, you saw what happened in the first half where PSG had a spell of quite dominant possession, and then literally Dortmund played out, broke, and Adeyemi was off and probably should have scored.
Yes.
The finish was a little bit disappointing considering he got into such a good position.
Right,
but
yeah,
I thought
yeah.
Adeyemi is an actual outlet, maybe off Füllkrug, if he was going to take off Julian Brandt, or drop Brandt deeper actually and maybe like take Sabitzer off, because there were points where Sabitzer was going as the highest player.
Yes.
And Füllkrug would then switch with him after the ball was had gone back to PSG in the second half. It was quite interesting watching that play out, because but what I mean by that is, you know, for example, in the first half, PSG only had 8 shots, 0.54 XG, 61% possession. So they still had like the bulk of the play, but they weren't like running at Dortmund like we expected them to.
No.
And then the second half and post goal is when they really ramped everything up. Well, I think Ramos had that one chance maybe before Dortmund scored, which was a really good chance actually. I can't remember if that was before or after the Dortmund goal. But his finishing was a little bit off.
Yes.
Well, a lot off actually.
Effort was there, but the finishing was not. And they've had a slight problem with their nines actually this year, I would say.
Yeah, I mean,
Colo Muani and Ramos have not quite been the harpoons we expected. But back to you.
I was just saying, I think it's one of those that I think obviously PSG probably deserves to win something, like maybe win the game. But I think so much of that came after the Dortmund goal.
This is it. Yeah, right.
I think that it was more, Thierry Henry said something quite interesting on CBS where he said that how PSG were playing in that last 15 minutes was how they should have started. And this is kind of what we were alluding to last week, where we were like, we were worried that one wasn't enough for Dortmund. And actually, that's because of how they've struggled in their previous two visits to Paris, right? What happened this time was that I think they were kind of pretty comfy in the first half in general. There was one time where I can't remember exactly what happened. I think it was either Hummels or Schlotterbeck gave the ball away really cheaply, and then PSG kind of broke, and that was the first time that that was the thing where I was like, Dortmund can't allow PSG to do this, because if PSG are just like camped around the Dortmund box and just apply pressure, they're not going to get out. But what Dortmund did manage to do quite well, I think, was pick their moments when they decided to play through PSG. I actually thought they were a little bit conservative in the early stages and thought they could have got out a bit more, but then you forget that they're playing with a one goal lead.
This is the thing as well, and you're also trying to have that double fullback thing on Mbappe. This is why I give huge defensive credit to Raheem. I mean, there's something so endearingly scruffy about his play, and also the effectiveness. You know, there was only one moment in the first half where I felt Mbappe really got in behind. They did that really fast switch where it was the first time ever, because I think Sancho defensively again, very good, I thought, doubling up with Ryerson, and there was that one moment when they got caught high up and Mbappe switches into space, and it was so noticeable because it happened so rarely. They were really, really good at denying him that space in behind. You know, Mbappe and Martinelli, I think, have that similar thing where they're so quick that at some point they're always thinking, I will get that moment there. And they didn't, to their credit, they denied it to them. And they were really clever. That bit they did where they were shepherding it across goal, Mbappe shepherds it across, and then he has to, he gets shepherded across the top of the goal and plays a square pass across the top. What's so clever about that is almost like watching this game felt less like a football match and more like a rugby match, where you have this, like the defense drifts across, and it's very hard to get these diagonal cuts in between the lines. It was really, really impressive. Like it was like shielding. They were really, really good for most of this game at just shepherding Mbappe into areas. And this is the thing I think he has to learn for his movement. Mbappe has to work out what happens. And I think he's still struggling to work this out. He has to work out how to handle a game where multiple bodies are being thrown at him. Not to tackle him, but just to ease him away. To ease him into different parts of traffic. And I think he never fully again worked that out in this game. Dembele, I thought, funnily enough, was a more unpredictable customer. And he was genuinely, I thought he was genuinely dangerous in certain plays in terms of like his playmaking. I thought he was the more dangerous proposition. But just
it's still quite quiet, weirdly. Because I felt like it more of the danger came from the PSG midfield.
Vitinha's passing. Yeah. Oh my God.
Vitinha by far the PSG's best player, I think, in this game, and over the two legs as well. But there were, I think, even though Zaire Emery, I think for his standards, had a fairly subdued evening as well, but was still involved in some of that interplay. He actually, I think, had the best chance. That one at the back post that hit the post.
Yeah, the post, yeah. My goodness, yeah, yeah.
That, I think, out of all of them was probably the best one. Vitinha had that one from miles out, which was the other one, which I thought was just like, wow.
Incredible effort. The Mbappe on the scuff, the Kobel save.
But that's the thing. It was a save that pushed it onto the bar.
Yes. If people look at the chances, the clear-cut chances that Dortmund had in the first leg, Füllkrug should have had two, and could have had three in the first leg. But I say all that only to say the game he had last night, wow. A titan, an absolute titan. You talk about not just being an outlet, but playing, there's something about the match control that Brandt and Füllkrug to an extent showed. Brandt, I mean, the only reason
Brandt was brilliant again.
The only reason Brandt wasn't man of the match, player of the century, is because Hummels was extraordinary.
Yeah, and we'll talk about Matt in a bit.
But Brandt was a fraction behind. And what he did, I know I mentioned this sort of Prozanetsky comparison with Red Star, and I know it's a bit hackneyed, but I'll use it one last time, only because his ability, his touch, controlling the ball out of a hostile situation and playing the perfect counter, slowing the play. It was so old school. It was like, it honestly reminded me of those old school, like, Champions League ties. Actually, weirdly enough, I know I talk about this a lot when Redondo played, second leg in the late 90s when they just had, Madrid had to get a 0-0 draw in a very, very windy stadium, Westfalenstadion, and they just basically shut the game down. And it reminded me of that, actually. It was such an old school, it was a masterclass. And it's a credit to how brilliant he was that when he got taken off, I was like, oh my God, Dortmund inviting pressure. There's only 5 minutes to go, but it felt like half an hour. He had exerted so much control over the middle of that field that it felt like half an hour. And he wasn't taking the ball in easy positions at all. I mean, we were talking in the chat about like where Brandt could play if he was, and I said, actually, Brandt is so good he could play anywhere across the front line if he had to in certain conditions. Not in terms of speed, but in terms of like footballing intelligence.
Or the midline.
Right. Anywhere across the midline. Against the team that sat deep, Brandt could play anywhere. Like in that, potentially in the front six, just because his vision. And I think actually it's a credit to him. And if you look at the way the game could have been opened up, and this is the thing PSG could look at, the thing that opened the game up would not have been dribbling, which is what PSG kept trying time and again. The thing that actually opened up Dortmund was incredible passing from deep. If you watched Vitinha punching the ball through those gaps, and the only player on the pitch capable of playing similar passes was Brandt last night. And it almost became a duel between them, if that makes sense.
Well, this is why I think Dortmund got out really well in the first half in particular.
And
I was a little bit disappointed they didn't do it more because when they did, they actually played really well in those moments, like Schlotterbeck as well and Hummels.
Schlotterbeck was colossal.
Nico Schlotterbeck, I think, was, this has been, you kind of have those like arrival games.
Yeah.
Right? He moved from Freiburg, very highly rated. Came in, I mean, what's this, his second season at Dortmund now? And, you know, came in at the same time that they got Nicolas Sula, and you were kind of wondering, what's that back four going to look like? Because Zula played right back for a bit. And actually, to be fair, this was a massive call. Well, not a massive call from Terzic, but I think a really good call in hindsight, in the sense that we wondered whether Zula might come in at right back. But Ryerson played so well against Mbappe over the two legs, if you think about it.
Brilliant.
There was probably like 6 minutes over the 180 that Ryerson kind of really struggled. And that was probably it, actually.
I mean, you're doing well if that's your return, yeah.
Right backs have been absolutely cooked by Mbappe. And Ryerson never really felt like he was scrambling over the two legs, really.
No.
And I think that goes to what you were saying earlier about like the way that Dortmund managed that that PSG left-hand side.
Superb.
But then I thought what was really smart from Edin Terzic later on was just like, right, now we put Zula on and we just pack that back line out with, you know, Zula, Hummels, Schlotterbeck.
Jeez.
And then you got Mattsson as the outlet. Then Mattsson ended up basically being the outlet.
Brilliant.
Over the two legs, he was really, really good as well. And Ryerson basically just had to look after Barkala, right? Who can be, we've seen him kind of like be
a
problem.
Barkala's, torched people, yeah.
But I actually think that while PSG created a load more opportunities at that point, I don't think moving Mbappe centrally helped them in any way.
No.
You know, Thierry Henry was saying this as well, like Mbappe's best position really is as that kind of wide drifting in. And what happened was when Mbappe went central, he then drifted a little bit more out to the right sometimes and created some really good opportunities that there was just no one there for.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I know Ramos missed a couple of chances, but at least he was kind of in that position for them.
Mm.
And I just thought that, I don't like PSG hitting the bar left, right and centre, right, or hitting the post, but it never felt like Dortmund were clinging on to anything.
Because...
Do you know what I mean?
Like,
is that like
I felt like if PSG scored, they weren't going to go on a run. They weren't going to go on a kind of like two goals. It just felt like Dortmund had... They felt like they had enough. They felt like they managed the game. Like, I remember because I was looking at the game and thinking, I said to my friends, if you'd said at the start of this tournament that Dortmund would be 45 minutes from Champions League final, most people have been like, no way. Like, what the hell are you talking? And what I think they did so well was they managed the game. They managed this tie in stages, right?
Yeah.
You could feel, and this is what I loved about the coaching here. You could feel distinct shifts. At 45 minutes, defensively superb, a goal up, and just they had that clear water ahead of them. And you're like, okay, 45 minutes till the final. And you just felt it was like 10 minutes. No, it wasn't. 30 minutes till the final, 20 minutes, 10 minutes. And you could feel Dortmund actively making decisions. I said this before about this tournament. What I love about it is watching elite coaches and players. And Terzic is an elite knockout coach. Having won the Pokal and now this this final, we can say that knockouts, he's really earned his Spurs. You could feel the players and you could feel Terzic working out problems in stages. We don't need to run and get a third goal. Actually, if we push high up, we're going to invite the kind of pressure they want. If we go for the third goal, if we're aggressive, is this something about twist or stick? If we're aggressive and look for that space in behind, that is what Mbappe is waiting to feast on. And there are a whole load of PSG players waiting for that. They're trying to dribble at us, but they haven't realized the only way they can beat us is by passing through us. They nearly worked it out. You could see them in the first half when they were playing around the top of the box, these square passes coming in and not desperate defending, but certainly more agitated defending from Dortmund. The thing that really got Dortmund wasn't trying to beat two or three men, which is what PSG seemed to be trying to do all night. It was actually quick combinations, work it square, cut it across. That is the only thing. Well, so the passing from deep and the quick movement of the ball. So maybe a Leverkusen is a better matchup for Dortmund. And that's actually funny. That's why Dortmund maybe have struggled more against teams like that than teams like PSG. That PSG weren't trying hero ball, don't get me wrong, but what they were trying to do was get the ball to key dribbler, isolate, one-on-one. Oh wait, no, it's one against four. Oh, that's not sustainable. And Dortmund could have done that all night. They could have done that all night. Like, if they played another 10 minutes, PSG might have got one more, but I didn't see Dortmund tiring of their plan.
No, me neither.
The reason I'm making such a point of the tactical masterclass from Dortmund is you're going to get a lot of people kind of going, oh, lucky Dortmund, lucky this, lucky that. In the same way people said, lucky Real Madrid. Here's the thing. If it keeps happening, it's not an accident.
And also, the thing that happened mainly from this game was that Dortmund learnt from the group stage. They didn't beat PSG in the group stage. They lost in Paris and they drew at home. And to beat PSG twice and keep a clean sheet in both games is not a fluke, actually.
Not a fluke.
I know that PSG had the better chances, but like I say, so many of those came after Dortmund went 1-0 up because Dortmund was just like, we don't need to really do much here. We've got that two-goal cushion and we're just got like, we're not going to get sliced open. Like the amount, like for example, in the Leipzig game a couple of weeks ago, Hummels loses it, I think, on the halfway line and all of a sudden Leipzig are in. There's no one really between him and Gregor Kobel. That wasn't going to happen last night because it didn't need to happen last night.
No.
You have to manage the game and manage the tie in a way that you know gives you the best chance to go through against a side like that. And the fact that they kept two clean sheets, no matter how many times PSG hit the post or whatever, that isn't a fluke. And Vitinha actually alluded to this, and he was interviewed afterwards and he said something like, the post isn't the fault or something like that, or the luck comes from something else. But I thought that was interesting because I think he was more like alluding to the fact that they didn't really create that phase of play that was just like, right, this is where we kind of take the lead and this is where we kill the tie off.
Yeah, it wasn't like that sort of, for example, the second half. It wasn't the game against Barcelona, for example.
No.
The second half, you really felt, you know, although they lost, the first half they lost against Barcelona, but you felt them taking control and you felt like, okay, if that PSG turns up in the second leg, they're going to be just fine.
Mm.
I never once felt that PSG were absolutely having the game they wanted. I felt they had that many people that's better. I felt like Dortmund pretty much always got the game that Dortmund wanted. I felt like, you know, actually weirdly enough, Dortmund, to a little extent, channeling Atleti, you know, the way that Dortmund beat PSG in the second half of this game was very much that. And it wasn't just, oh, sit deep, park the bus. No, there was a sophistication to it. That's the thing. There was one bit where Ali McCoy was criticising Brandt for not playing a quick counter. And I was like, actually, no. I know what McCoy meant because there was a pass on to Sancho, but I thought, no, weirdly enough, that makes the game chaotic. Yeah. And Brandt thought, I'm not falling into that trap because if I give it to Sancho, he's going to run into multiple coverage, they'll counter us, and the game's going to get stretched. And Brandt thought, no. This is the thing, he never took the bait. I know I keep talking about this, but the decision-making from him.
Dude, I've been so impressed with him this season. I think he's moved into that role. Yeah. He is the connectivity.
Yeah, he is.
Basically.
He is.
Like we said last week, if Julian Brandt was coming off the bench for Real Madrid against Bayern tonight, you wouldn't think twice about it because it's just the kind of place that you'd be like, yeah, of course, like Julian Brandt's just the kind of player who ends up at Real Madrid for 7 years and no one really...
No questions it.
Yeah. And I think that he could play at any of the top... He could be at any of the top clubs in Europe. And he is a top club in Europe. Like, I know Dortmund are fifth in the Bundesliga, but this is one of Europe's great clubs. I feel like the distortion of the Premier League money and also stuff like PSG, and maybe like, you know, Real Madrid and Barcelona to some extent, I think has distorted how people view Dortmund. And
yes,
I know that people go there and they develop and they move on a lot of the time, but actually, this is a massive club. It is one of the biggest clubs in Germany, the second biggest club in Germany, I imagine.
Yeah.
It consistently has the biggest attendances in Europe.
80,000 for a home game every week.
Every week. Sold every out. Week. Like, ausverkauft.
Unbelievable. We might get the Bellingham Derby.
Jedi are being murdered.
On June 4th, Star Wars returns. Only on Disney+. Plus.
I didn't do it! Believe me!
She was my student. Let me be the one to bring her in.
Now she is a student of the dark side. An acolyte.
Star Wars, The Acolyte. 2-episode premiere June 4th, only on Disney+.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on, I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit jiffylube.com.
One thing that we need to talk about, because we're praising individuals, we have to have a Hummels conversation.
Yeah, before we do though, can I just ask you about, to segue into it, can I just ask you about the penalty? The one that was on the line that Hummels made the tackle on.
Oh, the Dembele. Oh my goodness.
Because the ref points to the spot and then immediately kind of goes, actually, no, it's outside. And then VAR checks it and doesn't overrule him.
Wow. Wow.
I want to go to that guy's optician.
The guts of that call, that is like...
But kind of correct.
Can I put this way? When they study that man's eyes, they'll find that he can see individual beams of light.
They really individual will. Blades. The reason he gave it was because he could see the individual blades of grass to a higher resolution than
he could.
Any cameras that picked it up.
I think there was a moment, because you see that he pauses, he goes, no, that's not a penalty. I think he actually stopped, and I think he sensed the universe. You know, there's moments in those sci-fi movies where someone like just steps back and they see eternity between two worlds. You know what he said? That spiritually, that was not a penalty. In his soul, he's like, in my soul, I know it not to be so. It really felt like a spiritual moment, didn't it? Like, it was Dembele attacking the space and Hummels spotting the danger, not a fraction late, but like, this is where the speed of Dembele really comes into focus. And I was like, that is, when I saw it, of course, in real time, you think it's a penalty, but again, I'm not. This is why he's a world-class referee. And I'm just sitting at home. Yeah, and we are not.
I thought he made the right call.
In the free kick from Asensio into the wall, and the danger was cleared. And then it was one of those ones where it's those free kicks where, unless you're an absolutely elite free kick taker, it's too close to goal.
But yeah, so let's lead on to that Mats Hummels, because the thing I thought was great about that was that even in an amazing Mats Hummels performance, and he's been incredible over the two legs, you get one of those moments, you get a moment where you see it play out. Anyone who's watched Mats Hummels for a long, long time knows how great he is, but also knows that there's a slight moment when you're like, oh no, uh-oh, Mats, I can see the lunge and the hands go up straight away, almost like mid-lunge, because he knows he's going to get
done. Yeah, right.
Like, but he got away with that one.
His passing under pressure. So this wasn't a case of someone just like hoofing clear. Mm. This was, you know, really considered positioning, passing under pressure, leadership, and that header as well.
Wow.
I mean, goodness. That's some old school. I mean, a centre back header from a corner. It's such a classic. And just the way he positioned himself to get space for that, as they say in basketball, separation, the way he got himself clear and got that header down. And, you know, a mismatch, actually, in that centre back configuration when he's going up against his rivals in that situation. His power, his height, his athleticism. In those close quarters, it was just an absolute mismatch. And Flo pointed out a really good... Flo was hilarious. She pointed out like his eyes before the goal. It's almost like lustful intensity just before the ball swung in.
Well, can we talk about how the goal, how that corner came about though? Because I think that was a bit of a difference between PSG and Dortmund on the night, is that Dortmund didn't really make an error like that.
Yeah.
Playing a really bad back pass to Donnarumma, and it's, what, half a yard over the line before he gets to it. Just a really scruffy patch of play that he didn't need to happen. And actually,
the
fact that the goal comes from that.
They had a couple of moments like that, actually.
Margins, man. It doesn't matter how many times you hit the post. Like, that's the thing that, you know, when you get to this stage of the competition, you cannot afford little tiny errors like that.
No.
Because you just get punished. And usually you kind of see PSG punishing teams that have those slight moments, you know. I think
But this is the thing people weren't talking about really enough, like the number of, you know, clean sheets that Dortmund have kept in this tournament. Mm. And PSG's problem in just keeping clean sheets themselves. To credit to TNT, there was a mention of it there, but the matchups... It's easy to say this in hindsight, because don't get me wrong, I'll be full disclosure, I felt like PSG were going to maybe win this by a couple of goals. I really did. I'm not going to.
Yeah,
like,
me too. No, me too. I won't backtrack on that.
No. I really, but to their credit, PSG, you could see there were elements where they were playing themselves into form. I was concerned by them getting hosed against Leipzig, because I saw that and thought, are you getting a bit loose? But then I think as well, PSG at some level were like, Dortmund at some level were like, we have to focus on the Champions League. Like, this is the only way we're going to get in. The way that those teams are playing, and you look at the way Stuttgart, you know, dispatched Bayern, they're just too good. We're just not going to get top four against these sides. They're playing too well. They're just out of sight. And it felt they were constantly problem solving. We talked about Sabitzer getting into goal scoring form in the last couple of games prior to the first leg, but also just not just goal scoring form, but his positioning, his movement, his intensity, his intelligence, and Chan as well, Emre Chan, you know, who will go slightly unheralded in all of this, but some sections of his play were just superb. You talk about elder statesmen.
My favorite Emre Chan is just steady Emre Chan.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That is like, keep it dead fucking boring. That is my favorite Emre Chan.
That bit where the break is happening and then maybe down the left and he just jogs into position, left center, just there to mop it up. If there's a counter, if anything spills from the table, he'll catch everything. Like all of that. It's just monitoring, screening, sitting, really just elite. Loved it.
Just think, a month ago, Dortmund were 2-0 down in the Metropolitano. And we were like,
it's wild to think that.
That goal.
The late one.
Yeah, the Sebastian Haller goal.
Yes.
Was so important.
Shout out to Haller. Haller has shown up big time.
Yeah. Like, I think that is such an important goal that will go maybe, I hope not forgotten.
Mm.
But.
Good shout. Great shout, actually.
It's a really
because
important goal.
I remember that. Yeah, the way they just. God, the way that Atleti in that first half hour, you just thought they were going to run away with that tie.
And do you know what's been really interesting, actually, just in this? I think it feels like Terzic has kind of done a very NBA playoff thing and shrunk the rotation.
Oh, great shout. Okay. Because it also builds trust in the players.
Mm.
Like the confidence it gives people to know that you're going to go to, Paris, substantially trusting them to get the job done in those conditions, everyone knowing how much tougher Paris is and the crowd making you aware that you're in a game like that. You know, not the biggest, I mean, not the biggest away support for Dortmund, but they were loud, but the home crowd in Paris were really,
really, really feeling good.
Because this is their team. Mm. Now, what Luis Enrique has built is a football team that can really play football. And whatever we say about PSG, I won't call them hero ball. This is not a hero ball team. This is a serious football team. No, not anymore. Not anymore. And that is credit to him. And I'm excited to see where he takes PSG now. And I haven't used the word excited in connection with PSG in a while. Right? Like, this is now coaching. Lee Kang-in, brilliant playmaker. And Mbappe leaving, I think, in a funny way, might be better for the attack in the long run because it will give them less predictability in terms of who they feel their go-to should be. I think there are times, and this is going to sound controversial maybe, but he's better sometimes as a deterrent in certain attacks than as a go-to option. His coverage is so heavy, they needed to work out. I don't think they ever really worked out what to do when he was drawing all that pressure.
Mm.
I don't think we saw enough quick switches. And maybe you could criticize, I don't know, like a Ruiz for this. I don't know. There's small criticisms, but still small margins make the difference. When a player like Mbappe is drawing so much coverage, you almost need to work on the spaces, the free players. Because with Mbappe there are always free men. Yeah. So one criticism of PSG, they didn't really use their free men well enough. But, you know.
One other player I want to shout out is Niklas Füllkrug because...
Yes.
I think in this game, he played a very different role to the first leg.
Mm.
Especially in that first half, how he was an outlet. He did that. Was one where he got a throw in. He was almost on the byline. Got a throw in to him and just literally, I think, chested it and laid it off and created a chance for... I think it might have... There was one for Adeyemi and I think there was one for Ryerson, maybe? There were two very similar things that he laid off. And he was just basically being used as that, like, right, just ping it to him.
A pivot, yeah.
Yeah, and I thought he played a good...
I thought the two legs, he was brilliant. Touch was excellent. Think the ball stuck really, really well.
Yeah, because he didn't really have a lot of the ball in this game compared to the first leg, but I still think he played very well. His link-up play in the first half as well when Dortmund broke a couple of times was really, really good. In fact, some of those moves, thinking back now in the first half where they just played out down that left-hand side, pinged a couple of passes through and they were out, switched the ball over to the right-hand side to Sancho. It was so good. And actually, like I said, I was a bit like, why aren't Dortmund doing more of this? But actually, they didn't need to.
Right, this is it.
Were really kind of picking and choosing their moments in that first half. And I think getting into halftime, looking back now, getting into halftime 0-0 was so in, like absolutely imperative from a Dortmund point of view, because you're leading in the tie with 45 minutes to go. And then you get a moment like that, that set piece, and you double the lead. And it's just, I think their game management over both legs actually was really, really good.
Yeah.
Really good.
I agree.
Before we go though, do we talk about this from a PSG point of view now? What's, because this is, Mbappe's about to go. What do these years of his career look like? Really strange mixture of stuff, right? And I don't want to make it too much about Mbappe, but I think it's
important to mention.
It's important because you're about to enter that next phase of whatever. Like, this is going to be a different PSG from now on.
Yeah.
The PSG of like the last, what, 14 years, I think it's done.
Yeah.
And you look at who else is in that squad, and I think Luis Enrique wants to build a team of 11, not like a team of 8 plus 3 or whatever, like has been the case before.
Mbappe was at PSG for 7 seasons. I think it's fair to say that not either party got exactly what they wanted out of this. But Mbappe will never have to, his great grandkids never have to work again. He's maximized his commercial potential. And don't say that in a cynical way. I mean, as in, there's other considerations in football other than just, you know, trophies. He's won plenty of domestic trophies. I think the European level is the frustration for him. It's something he wants. I think he wanted to win the Champions League in his hometown. Like, I think we can't discount that. Like, people look at PSG and all the rest of it, but this is a guy that grew up around the corner.
Mm.
Right? And the psychological thing of, you know, bring a World Cup back to France, immense. Bring a Champions League to Paris. I think that must have been a huge motivation, and one we can't discount. And it's one we may not, it might get lost in the bigger conversation about Mbappe and legacy and everything. But that would have been a huge look. Like, just the psychological aspect. I mean, Steven Gerrard got to do it. Steven Gerrard got to bring like a Champions League back to his neighborhood. And for Mbappe to do that with a club that he'd basically been the cornerstone of would have been huge. So this is a key reason why he would be hurting. And I think I want to give credit to Mbappe because for all the talk about players going soft in league, like losing their edge, look how lights out brilliant he was so often in the Champions League and the international level. That is not, if you are mailing it in, you don't play as well as he has played against elite opposition when you're called upon. And it will be forgotten because he didn't have the best 2 games recently. But don't forget the early stages of this tournament when he was just torching Real Sociedad. A very, very good Real Sociedad team where he was the only difference between the teams.
Mm.
So I have some sympathy for him from that perspective. I suppose the challenge he will have is arriving at Madrid with his star slightly dimmed. Because he could be arriving in a dressing room where that young collection of players have 2 Champions Leagues to their names before he even gets in there. And then he's in that weird position of, I'm the superstar signing, but they've won twice in the last years and I haven't. So there's a question then of how he fits into that constellation. If he'd got to the final at least, against the team he might be joining potentially, then he can go with more leverage. And weirdly, I think there's a strange thing where the leverage with which he enters the dressing room now in Real Madrid is very different now.
Mm.
2 years ago, you would have said, if Mbappe joins Madrid, it'll be his dressing room. It won't be, actually. That's big, I think. Now, in relation to PSG and where they go, there's that concern. There's that, you know, when he saw the players collapsing at the end of this game, not only because of the pressure, but I wonder if there's a sense of, are we going to get this far again this time soon without Mbappe there? Funnily enough, I think this is one of those weird moments where you lose a player as good as Mbappe, you reconfigure the front line, and funnily enough, it might actually free people up. I think Randall Colomwani is an exceptional player. I think we're going to see so much more from him potentially. Barcola is brilliant. And I think Luis Enrique will now be liberated to coach exactly as he wants.
And also, Barcola, Colomwani,
dude,
and Dembele as a 3 is not... Colomwani and or...
And then any
Gonzalo
one of,
Ramos.
And any one of 4, any one of 3 of Ruiz, Lee Kang-in, Vitinha, yeah, and Zaire.
He was brilliant when he came on, I thought, Lee Kang-in.
That's what I'm saying, man. Like, I'd be excited as a PSG fan with what's coming.
Yeah, me too.
I think the football, the fluidity, the unpredictability, I think will be really good for them. So, weirdly enough, I think it's win-win. Mbappe needs to move on.
25
and yet still only 25.
Yeah.
The perfect time to, it's been the perfect time for him to move for the last 3 years, to be honest. But with Mbappe taking as much care of himself as he does, this is a guy that's going to be scoring goals for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
Like, there is more to this guy's game than speed. This is the thing. Like, Mbappe's going to be just fine. So are PSG. The end. Yeah.
Final word for Edin Terzic, who has taken his club. This is a Dortmund boy. I think if you think about his run as manager, when he's been kind of amazing, you know, stepped in to take over from Favre when Lucien Favre was let go, just as an interim, won the Pokal, gave Dortmund a bit of a headache because they'd already announced that they were bringing in Marco Rosa, replaces Rosa again, gets them into a position last season where they should have won the league. That video was doing the rounds of him stood in front of the Sud Tribuna at the end of last season when the fans are singing back, and he's just, you know, he's kind of starts crying, and it's just a bit like too much for him, understandably, because imagine coming back and bringing the title back to Dortmund for the first time in 12 years.
Right.
And then
it was almost too much, actually.
Yeah.
I felt that, I think everything around that game
against
Mainz, I think it was too much.
But you see like that kind of performance compared to this kind of performance, and how mature he has been through this Champions League run. We talked about it in the group stages, how streetwise they were in the group stages. Completely different to what their league form was at the time.
Took the emotion out.
I'm just really like, Edin Terzic is interesting because I think some people have raised, I think, valid criticism about certain tactical things, especially over the last season. And I do think that there is a, you know, I think especially nowadays, when you've seen the success that people like Sebastian Hoeneß have made at Stuttgart, or what Xabi Alonso has done at Bayer Leverkusen, people want to see what these managers are about straight away. They want to be like, oh my God, this guy plays this way, or look at the way this guy plays. Funnily enough, Terzic has always struck me more of a bit of an Ancelotti type.
You work with the players you have, and that defines the system.
Yeah.
Not like I have a system. And that's very modern in its own way, actually.
I kind
of
like
For all of Terzic's shortcomings, we can't say he's not a modern coach.
There are ways that he wants them to play, obviously, but I feel like he's more...
He adapts the strengths of what
And I'm just so happy for him to take Dortmund to it, to be the one to take Dortmund back to a Champions League final, because he took them so close last season to win the league, and then to follow that up with a Champions League final
after such a demoralizing league defeat.
But also the fact that he their win against PSG in the first leg got them back into the Champions League.
It's unreal.
So as much talk as there's been about the disappointment of this league season, it's also been kind of blown apart by this run that Leverkusen are on. Like, tomorrow they can go and break the all-time unbeaten run for a club side in the UEFA era. It's just been a weird Bundesliga season in general. Yeah, Dortmund have been disappointing in the league this season. A lot of teams have. No matter who they play now, really, they've recently beaten Bayern in Munich for the first time in, what was it, 10 years? They won't fear Bayern in the final. If they play Real Madrid, they've just knocked out PSG. They won't fear Real Madrid.
And
whoever they play, they're not going to be favourites. It's kind of perfect for them. But I just feel like Terzic deserves a lot of love because he just always strikes me as such a good guy.
And I love that you've ended on him, because I feel like, I mean, this is like a fan playing real life football manager. Really? Like,
I mean, it is.
It's exactly that.
Yeah.
Justin, it's just an incredible story. And I think, you know, in football, you know, all the money, all the whatever, but it's amazing to have a good old fashioned football story at the heart of it. And that's what Terzic is with this team.
Very, very hyped to see who they play.
Me too.
And we will be watching Real Madrid Bayern tonight, recording again tomorrow morning.
Indeed.
With our thoughts on that. But I reckon we leave it there, huh?
Let's do it.
Hey, we hope everyone's staying safe, staying well, wherever you are. And don't forget to check Righty's House if you want to chat about Crystal Palace, Manchester United, and the WSL title race as well. As we mentioned, we'll be back tomorrow. And don't forget to check the Stadio Rochers playlist on Spotify. Speaking of which, we're playing out on Hot Voodoo Dub by Crucci. Anything you would like to add, Musa Okwonga?
Nothing further.
Wunderbar. Then, much love, everyone. We'll be back with you tomorrow.
See you then.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.